Good evening. I'm Deborah Penta, and in tonight's edition of Top Growth, we're taking a look at emerging franchise markets in the Northeast. According to the International Franchise Association, franchise businesses continue to grow at a rapid pace, faster than the rest of the United States economy. According to a recent report released from Washington, D.C., franchising remains on track to outperform the United States economy for the fifth consecutive year. Franchise businesses will add 248,000 new jobs this year, which is a 2.9% increase to 8.8 million direct jobs over the last year. The franchise industry's buzz is all about growth, and this year, among the list of top growth 500 franchises, was Dunkin' Donuts, which was ranked number 11. Joining me today is Rob Branca, Jr., chairman of the Dunkin' Donuts Independent Franchise Owners PAC, and among other corporate affiliations, he is also with Branded Management Group in Branded Realty. Thank you for joining me, Rob.
My pleasure.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. As we think about franchises in the Northeast, mm-hmm. can you tell me a little bit about yours and your group and how long you've been doing it and just a little bit of background?
Sure, sure. My father-in-law, John Batista, was our founder. He started back in the 70s. He's an immigrant from the Azores archipelago of Portugal. Mm-hmm. Moved to Montreal, worked in a factory, and then worked for his brother in Warwick, who opened, he's one of the earlier franchisees. John moved to Worcester. He had an opportunity to buy a store on West Boylston Street, which he did, and he owned and operates that today. Still, we've actually relocated that store. The second store he bought was the first ever franchised Dunkin' Donuts location. It's at the corner of Park and Mill Street in Worcester. Mm. So I knew him because I was his attorney. He was a client. So before I married his daughter, that's what I did. I was a partner in a law firm based in Providence. We're a regional firm. And we represented many of the Dunkin' Donuts franchisees and other franchisees in different industries, pizza industry, beauty industry, mm-hmm. fitness industry. And then I got into the family business. We started to grow in Massachusetts. We've also are growing in New York and Ohio with partners. And have many partners. It requires a huge number of people to operate these stores, and it's a very hands-on type environment.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, Entrepreneur Magazine recently reported that Dunkin' Donuts currently has 11,000 franchises in the United States and Canada, with over 370 franchises added this past year. What do you attribute to this growth?
Well, it's a strong business. It's well regarded. It's, you know, nearly 100% brand identity awareness. Mm-hmm. When you open up, when you go into a new market, everyone already knows who you are. The most recent example that's been in the news is California. I have some friends that have opened stores there. Mm-hmm. And you've seen the news reports, huge lines, people sleeping out, camping out to be the first customer,
right.
Because there are so many transplants from the East Coast there.
Yeah.
So the brand is pretty beloved, a lot of nostalgia to it, and new customers want to see it, they mm-hmm. want to see what it's about. And one of the strong growth factors that Dunkin' has enjoyed is it is so regionally concentrated in the Northeast and New York metropolitan area that there's a huge amount of white space. So when we went out to Ohio, there were very few Dunkin' Donuts there, very widely spaced out. So we would open one, and people would tell us, I've been dying for you to open a Dunkin' Donuts in my town. They would come by while we're under construction, while we're still doing things. They just wanted to see it. They wanted to come in. They wanted to patronize us. And then when we were training crew, it looked like we were open. So people would just flood the store. So we learned to put up orange traffic cones. People would drive over them.
Mm-hmm.
Then we put furniture out there. People would get out and move it and come in anyway. Then we had to start parking cars at the entrance so that people wouldn't just come in and they would drive over the landscaping.
So there was
strong demand. Yeah.
Is this something that happens frequently when a new franchise brand moves into an area? I remember here in Westboro when Chick-fil-A opened and also mm-hmm. the Taco Bell, there was just unbelievable lines of people trying to get into these new establishments because of the excitement that this brand is here. It's in town. Everyone's looking forward to trying it. They've heard about it.
Right.
So do you think this is a trend nationwide where folks see a new brand, they get excited, they've read about it, they've heard about it, they might have visited other cities and they've experienced it, and oh, wow, it's coming here.
Right. I think that's absolutely true. And as we were discussing before the show, the Popeyes that opened on Park Ave in Worcester has had unprecedented success, huge lines. I think that's true. Brand identity, brand recognition is a huge asset, which is why I pay Dunkin' Donuts a royalty to use that name, because it's clearly the goodwill is valuable. And, you know, some brands have a cult-like following, and I would include Dunkin' in that tier of brands, particularly when it goes to an area where they weren't before, California, again, being the obvious example. That's a huge competitive advantage. So, and that's why franchising, I believe, is flourishing.
Right, and so to have a brand that's so incredibly established with a franchise organization as opposed to starting up something brand new, there are a lot of benefits to buying a franchise and as a new business that someone might want to start. There's a huge advantage to that, and also the formula, the guidebook on how to make it successful, and that might be attributed to the growth. What factors or demographics does Dunkin' Donuts look to when determining which area is going to be most successful for their stores?
Well, Dunkin's a little different than other brands. We're the franchisees are responsible for all the development. We own and build our own stores, and we look for traffic patterns, employment figures. You know, my customer is someone who's on their way somewhere. Right. That's my core demographic. It's not really a socioeconomic demographic because we serve people from every walk of life, from all ethnicities, all income levels. You know, if you're in one of my stores, you'll see everyone from a bank president to a landscaper. I mean, it's really runs the gamut, which we're very fortunate to have such a broad demographic appeal. So we're more looking for convenience factor, make it easy for our guests to get into the store, get out of the store, and make it a pleasant environment for them. Make the drive-through easy to navigate, safe to navigate. Because if it's unsafe or difficult or inconvenient, people will drive right by.
People don't have the time today.
Right.
It's all about convenience.
Exactly.
And so you look at those communities where your real estate has 80,000 cars passing by it a day, or 100,000 cars, or there's easy accessibility from a downtown location. So it really is about the convenience of the consumer.
Correct. Yeah. And and you know, you time it. We, my group, my family, we look at also the positioning in the commute, right? If there's a community in Westboro and everyone's working on 128 or they're working on 495, where are those people driving? I want to be as close to their house as possible so that they have time. I don't want to be at the end of the commute because people are starting to run out of time. As you said, people are very busy. You know, they're already returning phone calls before they even get to work. So we're very mindful of that, try to make it as easy as possible for our guests, as convenient as possible, get them their coffee and their breakfast as soon as we can.
And so let's talk a little bit about that from a breakfast standpoint. So health kick, you know, get my coffee in the morning, of course, that's great. But I noticed that Dunkin' Donuts recently has added more to its menu.
Right.
And that's a really good thing because you're catching those people that are on the go, on the run, running from meeting to meeting, running from event to event. So has the menu additions, has it helped with A, revenue? Are you getting more people into the stores that you normally wouldn't at different times of the day? So now do you have more people coming in at lunch where you might not have in the past? How has it changed dynamic?
We've added, you know, we've always had our core breakfast sandwiches, which are still the number one sellers. But we've rounded that out with healthier options, less indulgent options. Egg white flatbread is a breakfast carrier. Lower sodium. We've taken trans fat out of our entire menu, and we've seen the trends developing. So several years ago, we began taking sodium out of our products gradually so that it's not a sudden taste change to our guests. And that was, I think, a good decision. I think it's helped us position us to appeal to a broader range of people. So I might not get In the past, we might not have gotten someone who was, you know, very health conscious, because they may say, well, other than a coffee, there's really nothing for me there.
Right.
That's changed. We you know, we have oatmeal,
oh,
we have
oatmeal
all those other
option,
products.
Which is great.
Right. So that's, some of the stores sell fruit.
Bananas. I
right?
noticed there were
and
bananas in there.
Mm-hmm. Real fruit smoothies now.
Right.
We're going to be having a wider variety of blended beverages, and we've transitioned, like our coladas before.
Mm-hmm.
We have a colada light now, where a colada might have been up to 500 calories. Now, the colada light version of that is under 100. And it's made with ice as opposed to a sugary frozen base.
Mm-hmm.
So our new blender platform will allow us to use, to offer a much wider variety of healthier mm-hmm. drinks. That are still still taste indulgent,
right.
but aren't necessarily as caloric.
Which is fantastic, because you're really listening to what the consumers are looking for and meeting the needs, especially as we are such a more health-conscious
right.
environment. And as I was doing research on the different franchise organizations from a growth standpoint, there were some health clubs that were in the top spots, and
mm-hmm.
And so we're starting to see this evolution, which we've seen since the 70s and 80s of
mm-hmm.
people trying to live more healthier lives. But it's nice to see it coming into the real fast food and
mm-hmm.
beverage sector of the franchise market, where
right.
it's more standardized across the board. So that's
right.
really super.
And if you want to stay relevant, as you said, you
yeah.
know, you have to follow your guests. You
yes.
know, you have to follow what consumer preferences
right.
are. And if you don't stay relevant, you're not going to stay in business. And you know, the most recent news in my world has been McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
They're how they are continually losing sales, losing customers. I mean, they're McDonald's. They'll eventually figure it out. They've
right.
been around long enough. They're very smart people, very strong business people in their franchisee community. They'll eventually get it right. You know, now they're going to all-day breakfast. They're coming after us. They launched
right.
McCafe because
mm-hmm.
they've seen how successful we are, how appealing we are to the consumer. So they've tried to do that. I don't think it's been successful, and I can just tell because they're still giving away coffee for free.
Right.
And if they could charge for it, they would.
And they might have to just completely reinvent themselves.
Correct.
They might have to really take a step back and reinvent themselves, and that could be very risky, but at the same time it could offer them tremendous return if they actually think about what is the dynamic of 2015, 2016 looking ahead,
right.
and where are we now versus when we started oh so many years ago.
Right, and fortunately yeah. for them, they have the resources to
they
take
do,
that kind of
so
risk.
They should take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I think they will.
Yeah.
They're trying a different customizable upscale burger concept. I've
mm-hmm.
seen them test. I was out in San Diego last month and saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got brands like Starbucks. I also went, one of the reasons I went to San Diego is they're selling wine and craft beer at Starbucks now.
Yes.
It's a bar now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was odd.
Yeah.
But interesting.
But it is, but there are company stores, and I think they're
mm-hmm.
really
right.
looking at the demographics as to who is their target audience. And so maybe that fits into the sort of, okay, it's a meetup spot.
Right.
Totally different environment where
right.
they really looked at their marketing in a whole different way, more of a customer engagement, not just in the eating, but also in the atmosphere. And they did that through their colors and their decor and their
right.
Furnishings. And so that might be the reason why they are. But the beauty of that is they're so different that they're really not, they could be a competitor from a coffee standpoint,
mm-hmm.
but they're really not a competitor through that you know, you're not going to a Dunkin' Donuts to sit and relax and hang out for 3 hours with your Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solution to making sure that you can get what you need
right.
and get on your way.
Quickly.
Exactly,
right.
which is perfect.
And we do have some locations that are more leisurely, and they're designed to be that way. For example, a store we built 2 years ago at Kent State University has got two levels.
Mm-hmm.
It's got soft seating. All our stores have Wi-Fi because people need
they
Wi-Fi.
Need it. Right.
And even if they're going to just meet up, like, oh, I'm going to see houses with a real estate broker, I'll meet with her, then they can pull up their listings and go over
mm-hmm.
them before they hit the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a pretty common thing. And, you know, so we've also responded to that, as has everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Starbucks, it's a little easier for them. They're not a franchise. They don't have business partners. They flip
right.
a switch and order their managers to do something, and it just happens.
Right.
In the rest of the branded world, with franchisees, they have to get us on board. We have to get them on board. If we want to try something, we try to reach consensus on that. Mm-hmm. And that's a process. You know?
Right.
But we've got a system. We call it an advisory council. We have a district level, a regional level, and a national level. And you're elected up through those levels. So we work on that stuff continuously. New products, new store designs, new advertising campaigns, all of that stuff.
Yeah, so that's really great. What is the industry predicting as we look ahead into 2016 for new trends or existing trends that are going to continue in the franchise market going forward?
Well, all of us, not just Dunkin' Donuts franchisees, but are deathly concerned about the National Labor Relations Board and some of the controversial decisions that they've been handing down that have made, and related regulations, whether it's health insurance, paid sick leave, they've made it much more challenging to operate and to remain profitable. Mm-hmm. So I think you will see growth slow, or you'll see business models evolve to employ less people. You'll see technology replace human beings. That's already happening. And there are plans, there have been plans, because, again, you know, the industry has seen this trend developing and has been trying to prepare for it. So you'll see less jobs.
Yeah. Because it's really a lot of the issues with regulations. I mean, I think any business right now, especially the small to mid-sized companies, plagued with these, you know, regulations. It's very, very difficult.
And we're a family business.
Right.
And we're treated the same as Google. Like, we have an entire floor of a compliance department with lawyers and HR professionals, and we don't. It's me, my brothers-in-law, my father-in-law, our wives. That's
it. Right, exactly.
You know, we're running that company. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge to stay up to date, and the envelope is constantly getting pushed. And for example, the paid sick leave law that passed on the ballot in Massachusetts, we already provided up to 3 weeks of paid leave to our employees, and we have for years. My father-in-law started that many, many years ago, and it worked out very well for our employees and for us. We were still able to manage our business. They were still able to go back to the old country for an extended period of time, not lose pay. And then while they were gone, their kids, who were out of school, came to work for us every vacation. Mm-hmm. So it worked for them. Their family had extra income. They were still able to go visit their relatives, go to the weddings and the important family events, and not lose any pay. And we were still able to staff our stores with good, experienced employees and continue to serve our guests. This sort of dropped a bomb in that system.
Right.
And, you know, we're upset no one really asked us about it. But, you know, we're adapting to it. Again, it's just adding cost to something that was already working well for our crew members.
Right. And so that really puts a damper on the success of the business, obviously the profitability and the productivity and employee morale.
Correct.
Because something like that is, you're doing a wonderful thing with your leave, and then this comes on, it's like, well, why weren't we getting this before? And so that definitely can put a damper on morale, which
health
really
insurance
makes a difference.
Too,
health insurance is a killer
confusing
right now for small and mid-sized companies.
Yep. And we were providing it, obviously, before the Affordable Care Act, we had, you know, Romney Care. And before that, we were providing it anyway. The only difference that both of those two mandates made was we provide the same thing, it just costs more money.
Mm-hmm.
It's more expensive. We become less profitable, we are less willing to grow because of that, because it's, if there's just, why take the risk if the reward continually shrinks?
Right, and you need to make sure that you keep funds in reserve for the next thing that's going to come down the pike so that you can handle it, especially with 85 franchise stores all over the country.
We have lenders, we have financial covenants that we have to meet. And if our cash flow gets impacted, that affects those ratios. Mm-hmm. That could put us in default.
Right.
So we are constantly at risk of losing everything.
Right.
And, you know, we personally guarantee those loans. We personally guarantee our obligations under a franchise agreement to a franchisor. If we're a tenant on a lease, we're personally guaranteeing the rent. Mm-hmm. It's a hugely risky endeavor. And every hit to the bottom line that we take from these regulations makes it that much more challenging and that much more risky to do it. And, you know, you wake up some mornings and say, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Do I really need to be doing this? Why don't I just go get a job somewhere? Right. Wouldn't be the first time I've thought that.
Right. And so do you have lobbyists that work for the company, or do you lobby or go and try to campaign to get some of these regulations on the docket, to look at them again, to see if there's anything that can be done either locally or regionally or nationally to try to spearhead an initiative to make a difference with respect to that?
We do it at all of those levels. Mm-hmm. Many of us are personally involved in it. I'm one of the franchisee leaders that does it. Mm-hmm. And I have many friends from other brands, other parts of the country. And as a matter of fact, I'll be in Washington next week with several of them to talk about this. Things like depreciation, right? Mm-hmm. The tax extenders mm-hmm. that they wait till December 31st every year to pass. It's so hard to plan your budget when you don't know if that's going to be there.
Right.
And that's what we use to pay for remodels. And I remember during the Great Recession, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, we had a bunch of remodels due. Many brands suspended remodels because their franchisee didn't have the money. You couldn't mm-hmm. borrow the money. The banks were in chaos.
Right.
Credit tightened way up. And we were able to do it because they passed a very aggressive accelerated depreciation schedule. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think that's just a tax loophole. It's not. I mean, that's something we poured right back into our business. And many of the local contractors that we hired to do that work told us that was the only business that they had during mm-hmm. that period. And if we hadn't done those remodels, they would have gone out of business,
right.
auctioned off their equipment.
Right.
It was, I mean, so that was an enormous help to this area, mm-hmm. This area's economy. And I know those people. They work really hard.
Right.
And it's not, the work just wasn't there for them. They were ready, willing, and able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that are critically important to us. And again, we're facing another possibility that could just go away.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can't get a remodel loan because there's not really a business case for it. You're doing it to stay relevant, to improve, you know, obviously to things break, things mm-hmm. wear out, you need to replace them, and you want to stay relevant to your guests.
Right. So there's no question that while the franchise industry is growing and really booming in the Northeast and all over the country and Canada
Correct.
For that matter, there are still business issues that need to be dealt with on a regular basis. And a lot of the regulations that are currently in place are really stifling enough significant growth for those current businesses that are in existence. So I think a lot of this growth might be determined by, okay, how many more franchisors have signed the dotted line and taken on a new brand? Mm-hmm. But if we look at those stable, strong organizations such as yours, who has 85 stores or more or less across the country, who have been doing it for such a long time, the reality is you've got to stay relevant in your business, and you've really got to put a focus on every aspect that's external that's going to make a difference in how you're running your business, i.e. regulations, compliance, mm-hmm. and everything else to really grow within your organization as opposed to the industry growing overall.
Right, and it's, you know, just running the business itself is difficult enough
right.
without all of these unrelated things. And most people, you know, I happen to be an attorney, and I can't really understand how to comply with some of this stuff.
Yes.
And if you've got a mom and pop franchisee, say they own 1-2 Subways, I have no idea how they are going to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredibly difficult. Our franchisors are all up in arms. And then there was a recent ruling by the National Labor Relations Board on they are changing a decades long legal standard about what a joint employer is, two separate entities that happen to be working on something, or in this case it was Browning Ferris. They had a subcontractor who leased employees to them, and they said, well, you're both the employer. They are now suing McDonald's, and they are alleging the same thing. So that will directly impact franchising, mm-hmm. and it will become chaos.
Right.
Because My franchisor is a separate entity, Dunkin' Brands. I provide all the capital. I build the stores. Our franchisees own the distribution system. We're responsible for distribution. Our employees are our employees. We train them. You know, we set their compensation levels. My franchisor has nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. And the National Labor Relations Board wants to say no. They are also the employer. Because I believe they feel that it would be easier to unionize our workforce if they only had to go to the corporate parent and not all of the franchise owners.
And that brings up a whole other situation that isn't helpful for you. This has been incredibly enlightening to hear what you've been doing, and the growth and success of your company has been phenomenal over the years. But you've really enlightened us as to a lot of the challenges that you're facing and your group is facing. So thank you so much for joining us, and maybe we'll have you back on next year and we can focus on what happened, especially whether these regulations have changed and whether there's any difference in how you're operating.
No, thank you for the opportunity.
So thank you very much. It was great to see you. Thank you.
Same here.
Thank you.